Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good evening, everyone. Okay, today we will continue, and I'm sure definitely we will complete the Samadhitti Sutta, the Discourse on Right View. As consolation for those who have been sitting through all of these lectures on the Samadhitti Sutta, you should know that this sutta is often it's used as a basis for instruction in the fundamentals of Buddhist doctrine in monasteries in countries like Burma, Sri Lanka. So you've almost completed a course for not even novice monks, but this is like middle-level monks who are getting training in the technicalities of Buddhist doctrine. Okay, I hope also that everybody has the pages that I handed out last week, because we didn't reach the end. Did you get a copy, Eva? Okay, so last week we did sankharas, the formations as a condition for consciousness. Okay, now we come to the section on ignorance. We already saw that I think we have to come to the section on the formations. This will be beginning with section 60, because I've been explaining not adhering to the words of the sutta so closely, but just taking the sequence in a rather abstract way. So let's return to the words of the sutta, starting with 60, where the monks express their appreciation to Venerable Sariputta. Then they ask him if there is another way in which a noble disciple is one of right view. And the monks say that there is. And, okay, they say, when a noble disciple understands formations, that's the sankharas, the volitional formations, the origin of formations, the cessation of formations, and the way leading to the cessation of formations, in that way he is one of right view who has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, this is the teaching in brief. Then comes the elaboration. What are the formations and so on? Okay, here is the answer. There are these three kinds of formations: the bodily formation, the verbal formation, and the mental formation. Okay, what are these three types of formations? Last week, I said that the sankhara are unwholesome and mundane, wholesome volitions. Now, these unwholesome and wholesome volitions can be expressed through three channels or three doors. We call them the three doors of action. And so one door is the body. And so volition that is expressed through bodily action is the bodily formation. So unwholesome volition expressed through the body, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, any kind of violence, that is any kind of physical violence, that is unwholesome body formation, bodily formation. Wholesome bodily formation would be restraining oneself or abstaining from any of these types of unwholesome bodily action. Or it could be doing something physically to help somebody. Say if somebody is hungry, physically one gives the person food. If somebody is injured, one will help the person by maybe healing, helping to heal, their cleanse their wounds. So any kind of good action expressed through the body is a wholesome bodily formation. And similarly, with the verbal formation, unwholesome verbal formation, lying, slandering speech, harsh speech, idle chatter, and the wholesome verbal formation is the volition of abstaining from those types of unwholesome verbal formation, and then practicing good conduct by speech, speaking the truth, speaking in a way that promotes harmony, speaking gently, softly, politely to others, speaking in a way that is intended to promote the well-being of others, to give others wisdom and understanding, to guide and instruct others in what is good and wholesome. That is wholesome verbal formation. And the mental formation, unwholesome, are all thoughts, emotions, unwholesome thoughts, emotional states, plans, intentions, which don't reach expression through the body or speech, but just remain internally. The most prominent will be thoughts of governed by strong greed, strong hatred and aversion, and by wrong views. And then the wholesome mental formation will be the opposite of these, any kind of wholesome mental states, mental volitions, the mental inclination towards generosity, the mental inclination towards detachment, the mental state of loving kindness, the mental state of understanding, the inclination to gain wisdom, the development of wholesome qualities through meditation. All of these are wholesome but still mundane mental formations. Okay, and now it is said that with the arising of ignorance, there is the arising of the formations. With the cessation of ignorance, there is the cessation of formations. The way leading to the cessation of formations is just this noble eightfold path, that is, the things, the states from right view through to right concentration. Okay, now here we have an interesting and important point that ignorance is the condition for the arising of these mental formations, the volitional formations. And this is a point which has to be understood quite carefully, and it should definitely not be misunderstood, because if we misunderstand it, we can come to a distorted understanding of the whole Dhamma. Okay, if we look on the sheet that I gave out last week, I have to use some rather technical concepts to explain this. Because, okay, just we look at the text, we know that there are these wholesome, unwholesome volitions. So we say, ignorance is the condition for unwholesome volitions. Okay, this is obvious. But ignorance is the condition for wholesome volitions too. In that case, we're trapped. No way out. If we do bad things, we're in the grip of ignorance. If we do good things, we're in the grip of ignorance. The bad things are more pleasant than the good things. Might as well do the bad things. But it's not like that. Okay, now, in the sheet that I gave out last week, it says, ignorance is a co-nascent condition. Here, this is technical Abhidhamma terminology, and even though it's not terminology that comes from the suttas, but it's useful for understanding what is meant in the suttas. So ignorance is a co-nascent condition, a mutuality condition, and a root condition for the volitions in unwholesome states of consciousness. Okay, what does this rather cumbersome terminology mean? Okay, in an unwholesome state of consciousness, when my mind is sort of driven by greed, I only have one car, but it's not enough. I see my neighbor has a bigger car, shinier car. I'm boiling over with greed. I want to get a nice car like that too. He has a bigger, nicer house than I do. Or the other monk, he has a nicer robe than I do. I have this rather shabby robe. And people are coming and giving him nice presents, and I just get a towel and a piece of soap. Okay, so in this unwholesome state of mind, arising together with it, that's the meaning of co-nascent, born together. Just like two twins, one twin is born, the other twin is born. Born together with it is ignorance. Ignorance and greed arise together. And ignorance is the support for the greed. Just the way when we light a flame, we light a match, the flame arises, and the flame causes heat. So when ignorance arises, greed comes along with that ignorance. They're born together. If the mind is angry, full of resentment, again, there's ignorance there, not understanding, and that ignorance brings along with it, just the way the flame brings the heat, so the ignorance brings along with it the hatred. ignorance and greed, when they arise, they support each other. Each feeds the other. Each conditions the other. That's why they're called mutuality condition. And ignorance is one of the three unwholesome roots: greed, hatred, ignorance. So when there's ignorance in any state of consciousness, in any state of mind, that ignorance, avijja, is the same as moha. Ignorance is the same as delusion. And that delusion, that is one of the three unwholesome roots. So it's a root condition for the unwholesome state of consciousness. And within those states of consciousness in which there is ignorance, that volition, that sankhara, is conditioned by that ignorance. So these volitions in the unwholesome states of consciousness, those are the sankharas, the unwholesome sankharas. And those sankharas are conditioned by ignorance. There's always, in any unwholesome state of mind, there is always ignorance existing in that state of mind. That ignorance is present, actively present in that state of mind. So in any state of mind, there is some degree of deep-rooted not understanding things as they really are. That is what ignorance is. And so the mind is unwholesome because one doesn't understand things as they really are. Okay, but there are also the wholesome, mundane, wholesome states of mind. These are good states of mind, praiseworthy states of mind. These are states of mind that generate good karma. States of mind that will lead to our happiness, to our well-being in the future, states of mind that can lead to spiritual progress, states of mind that will lead to enlightenment, even the states of mind that are developed, that go along with developing the paramis, the paramitas. Those are mundane, wholesome states of mind. When one is developing the Bodhipakkhya Dhammas, still at the mundane level, like practicing any of the four foundations of mindfulness, developing the four Brahmaviharas, though they're not Bodhipakkhya Dhammas, developing the four right efforts, developing the jhanas. Those are wholesome states of mind, very, very beneficial states of mind. And yet, those states of mind too are conditioned by ignorance. How are they conditioned by ignorance? Ignorance, technically, is not present as an active component in those states of mind. Because wholesome qualities and unwholesome qualities are opposite. And when there's a wholesome state of mind, the unwholesome quality cannot be present simultaneously as an active component of that state of mind. But yet, it is said that these wholesome states of mind are still conditioned by ignorance, avijja, in the sense that until one reaches the end of the Buddha's path, ignorance remains deep within, you call it the deep within the bottommost layer of the stream of consciousness. As we use the expression anusaya, sui mian, yeah, as an underlying tendency. That is, it's a tendency with the capacity to rise up to the surface when it meets with the suitable conditions. And it is ignorance, that underlying ignorance, which makes these wholesome states of consciousness karmically active. It makes those wholesome states of consciousness capable of contributing to the extension, the prolongation of the cycle of rebirths. And so, as long as the anusayas, these underlying tendencies, are there, the wholesome states of consciousness will become good seeds which will bring happy, fortunate states of rebirth. But as long as they are bringing states of rebirth, they are still bringing one back into the bondage of samsara, back into the round of birth, old age, sickness, and death. And so the sankharas only become completely deactivated, lose their characteristic of being sankharas, being these binding forces, when the anusayas are eliminated. And that comes about only with the elimination of ignorance. Okay, so let us move on. Okay, I want to work through now. Okay, we come to section 64. The monks express their appreciation and ask Venerable Sariputta if there is another way in which a noble disciple is one of right view. He says there is. And he says, "When, friend, a noble disciple understands ignorance, the origin of ignorance, the cessation of ignorance, and the way leading to the cessation of ignorance, in that way he is one of right view who has arrived at this true Dhamma." Okay. That is the short or synopsis, the brief teaching. Now for the elaboration. What is ignorance and so on? What is the origin of ignorance? What is the cessation of ignorance? What is the way leading to the cessation of ignorance? Okay, what is ignorance? Not knowing about dukkha, about suffering. not knowing about the origin of suffering, not knowing about the cessation of suffering, not knowing about the way leading to the cessation of suffering, this is called ignorance. Okay, this is, you call it the standard canonical definition of ignorance. And usually in, for example, in the Samyutta Nikaya, where there are many explanations of dependent origination spoken by the Buddha, he usually takes the chain back to formations, and then from formations to ignorance, then he just gives a definition of ignorance. But he doesn't say anything about the cause for the arising of ignorance. He just takes it back to ignorance as not as the kind of first cause with a capital FC, but as the beginning point of his exposition. But here, Venerable Sariputta goes further and brings in a cause or condition for the arising of ignorance. He says, with the arising of the taints, the asavas, the influxes, there is the arising of ignorance. With the cessation of the taints, there is the cessation of ignorance. The way leading to the cessation of ignorance is just this noble eightfold path, that is right view to right concentration. Okay, here we have this definition of ignorance as not knowing the Four Noble Truths. Now, I've sometimes reflected upon this, and also a kind of understanding of ignorance that one comes across, say, in the writings of the Madhyamakans, which take ignorance to be not understanding, basically selflessness or emptiness. And I try to see, is there a way of reconciling these two? And it seems to me that there are two different standpoints that can be taken to the understanding or explanation of ignorance. One would be what you might call a psychological explanation, and that would be the explanation of ignorance as not understanding the selfless nature of phenomena, not understanding the empty nature of phenomena. That is, you might call this psychological, or can I use the word epistemological? Does anybody know it? Do I have to explain that word, epistemological? Does anybody understand the word? No philosophy majors here.
I'm not sure about it.
Okay. No philo majors. Okay. It means theory of... it's the branch of philosophy concerned with theory of knowledge. So it's derived from a Greek word relating to knowledge. So it's basically, it's concerned with the criteria of knowledge, how we know, what are the grounds of knowledge. So let's use the word psychological. Everybody knows that. Okay, so from a psychological, or in terms of how we relate to our experience, how we interpret our experience, not understanding phenomena are selfless, that they're devoid of any substantial reality, devoid of any kind of independent, self-subsistent reality. That would be the meaning of ignorance at that level. The explanation of ignorance in terms of not knowing the Four Noble Truths, this I would call a methodological definition of emptiness. And this is what I mean. That this definition of... Did I say definition of emptiness? No. This, I would say, is a methodological definition of ignorance. And this is what I mean. This is a definition of ignorance presented for the purpose of leading disciples to try to understand those principles of the teaching that the Buddha wants to lead them to understand. Those principles of the teaching that constitute the basic framework of the teaching, of the Dhamma. And so the Four Noble Truths constitute that basic framework. Okay, now we come to the statement that with the arising of the taints, there is the arising of ignorance. With the cessation of the taints, there is the cessation of ignorance. And now we might raise the question, what are the taints? Do we know what the taints are? Theosophists? What are they? Marcy, you've been a very good systematizer. Yeah. Okay, the taint of ignorance. Yeah, sometimes a fourth, the taint of views, but let's just stay with the three. In case you... wanted to see them in the text... you could just go over to paragraph 70 on page 144 and you have them listed. Okay, but now we're going to find something very interesting. Okay, we see that with the arising of the taints, there is the arising of ignorance. With the cessation of the taints, there is the cessation of ignorance. And ignorance is one of the taints, right? So we say from the taint of ignorance, there comes ignorance. So this is a way of establishing that ignorance comes from, let's say that any condition upon which ignorance depends will itself include ignorance. That there is no condition more fundamental than ignorance. Though ignorance can also be reinforced by the other taints. Sensual desire, when it floods into the mind, can, Buddhist texts, this is one of their favorite themes, how when a person's mind is overwhelmed by sensual desire, a person forgets his own benefit, he forgets the benefit of others, and just becomes blinded. So, sensual desire sort of strengthens ignorance. And this craving for existence, for continued existence, also strengthens and conditions ignorance. And ignorance itself strengthens ignorance. Okay, now after Sariputta has shown how the taints are a condition for ignorance, the monks ask another question. They ask if there's another way in which a noble disciple can be one of right view. And then paragraph 68, then paragraph 69, Venerable Sariputta says, there is such a way, and he says, when, friends, a noble disciple understands the taints or the influxes, understands the origin of the taints, the cessation of the taints, and the way leading to the cessation of the taints, in that way he is one of right view, whose view is straight, who is perfect confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. And what are the taints? What is the origin of the taints? What is the cessation of the taints? What is the way leading to the cessation of the taints? Okay, there are these three taints. The taint of sensual desire, the taint of being. This is the same as what I would call the taint of craving for existence, and the taint of ignorance. Okay, those are the three taints we have here. Now, what is the condition for these taints? What maintains them in being? From what do these taints arise? Then the text gives the, Venerable Sariputta gives the answer. With the arising of ignorance, there is the arising of the taints. With the cessation of ignorance, there is the cessation of the taints. The way leading to the cessation of taints is just this Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, and so we have ignorance as the condition for the taints, and the taints condition ignorance, which conditions the volitional formations. Then from volitional formations, we go down to consciousness, all the ways down to the whole cycle of birth, aging, sickness, and death. But do you think we're going to leave ignorance just stranded here? Because we ask, well, what is the condition for this ignorance? What is it? The taints, or the asavas. Then what is the condition for those asavas? Ignorance. What is the condition for that ignorance? The taints. And thus one goes... Excuse me? They're friends. Friends. They're sort of locked together in what we call an almost vicious cycle. Vicious circle, vicious cycle. I say almost vicious circle because it's not a relationship which cannot be broken. Because ignorance and the taints, and one taint is ignorance, are mutually conditioning, for this reason, the cycle of rebirths is without any beginning in time, any discoverable beginning. Of course, you could say that the condition for the taints in this life is the ignorance in the previous life. The reason for the ignorance in the previous life were the taints in the life before that. And the reason for the taints in that life was the ignorance in the life before that. And so on through beginningless time. But the cycle can be broken. And there's an interesting sutta that comes in the Anguttara Nikaya. Oh. I gave out this, I had the sheet given out, but what page is it? 255? Okay. Yeah, we shouldn't think of ignorance as some kind of mystical or metaphysical force, but ignorance is just our own lack of understanding, our own lack of comprehension. And this sutta, this is Anguttara Nikaya, Book of Tens, number 62. It starts off by saying, a first beginning of the craving for becoming, that's the craving for existence, cannot be discerned, of which it can be said, before that, there was no craving for becoming, and it came to be after that. But though this is so, there is a specific condition for the craving for becoming is discerned. The craving for becoming, too, has its nutriment, that is, its condition. And what is the nutriment or condition for the craving for becoming? Ignorance should be the answer. Ignorance, too, has its nutriment, its condition. What is that condition, that nutriment? The five hindrances. The five hindrances have their condition. The three ways of wrong conduct. The three ways of wrong conduct have their condition. Lack of sense restraint. Lack of sense restraint has its condition. Lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension. This has its condition. Improper, careless, or unwise attention. Ayoniso manasikara. Lack of wise improper attention has its condition. Lack of faith. Lack of faith has its condition, listening to wrong teachings. Listening to wrong teachings has its condition, association with bad people, or improper people. And so it's when all of these conditions link together, then they form a kind of momentum builds up, where one supports the other, which supports the other. And so eventually the five hindrances continue, and the five hindrances, we're on page 256 now, support the craving for becoming, and this craving for becoming is the nutriment for this ignorance. Or rather, it's this, the five hindrances make ignorance prevail, and this ignorance makes the craving for becoming prevail. But, the Buddha says, I'm going over to the next page. I don't know, did you get 257? Oh. Well, I'm just going from 256. I'm just taking it in positive order. He says, when association with good people prevails, then there comes listening to the true Dhamma. When there comes listening to the true Dhamma, then faith arises. When faith arises, then there is proper attention or wise attention. When there is wise attention, then there is mindfulness and clear comprehension. When there is mindfulness and clear comprehension, then there is restraint of the senses. When there is restraint of the senses, then there are the three ways of good conduct. That is, good conduct by body, speech, and mind. When there are the three ways of good conduct, then one practices the four foundations of mindfulness. When one practices the four foundations of mindfulness, then the seven factors of enlightenment are fulfilled. When the seven factors of enlightenment are fulfilled, then liberation by supreme knowledge will prevail. And so such is the nutriment of liberation by supreme knowledge. And so through this process of conditioning, wholesome conditioning, a momentum builds up, one factor conditioning the next, one factor giving strength to the next, until eventually this beginningless play of ignorance and the taints, ignorance and the influxes, that beginningless revolution, that beginningless, almost vicious cycle can be stopped and reversed and overcome. Okay, and that brings to an end our discussion. Oh, but just the one last paragraph in the Samaditti Sutta. Paragraph 71 is a way of concluding the whole discourse. Okay, when a noble disciple has thus understood the taints, the origin of the taints, the cessation of the taints, and the way leading to the cessation of the taints, he entirely abandons the underlying tendency to lust. That is, to sensual lust. He abolishes the underlying tendency to aversion. Okay, at this point, eliminating the underlying tendencies to sensual lust and to aversion, this shows the attainment of the third stage of enlightenment, the stage of the non-returner. But that's not yet sufficient. Going on, he extirpates the underlying tendency to the view and conceit, I am, asmi mana. And by abandoning ignorance and arousing true knowledge, he here and now makes an end of suffering. That is, he reaches the fourth stage of enlightenment, the stage of arahatship. In that way, too, a noble disciple is one of right view, whose view is straight, who has perfect confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, this is what the Venerable Sariputta said. The bhikkhus were satisfied, and they delighted in the Venerable Sariputta's words. Okay, now I can say this concludes our discourse on our explanation of the discourse on right view. Okay, now if there's any questions, comments, any points for discussion, please feel welcome to ask or to raise them. The three ways of wrong conduct? They're wrong conduct of body, speech, and mind. George?
I use the word influxes for the asadas.
Why do I use it?
What does it mean in particular? The influxes as a tense?
Okay, the word asava. It comes from a root, which means the root su, which means to flow. Okay, the root su means to flow, and it has a prefix a. Scholars used to have some debate what direction a means. Some said it means out. And so, earlier generation, I think Edward Combs had translated it, maybe I.B. Horner, outflows. Things that flow out, like, you know, dirty garbage, poisonous, polluted waste matter that flows out. But then others say, ah has the sense of things that flow in. That in the sense of polluted, dirty things that flow into the mind. I think the sense of in maybe is more correct. But it's uncertain. Anyway, this term asava was already in use before the time of the Buddha. It was used by some of the ascetic sects, like the Jains, I think, use it. And it was already the ideal amongst the Indian spiritual seekers was to reach the end of the asavas. So when the Buddha came on the spiritual scene, like his quest, his aim as a spiritual seeker was to reach the end of the asavas. This was the idea that he picked up from his contemporaries. And so once he reached enlightenment, he took this term over. But you see, the idea of asavas was interpreted differently in the different schools of thought. The Jains considered it to be some kind of almost like a material substance that adheres to the soul that one has to remove by practicing asceticism and austerities. But the Buddha took this term over and just gave it the sense that was in harmony with his own system. So he gave it the meaning of this craving for sense pleasures, craving for continued existence and anywhere within the round of becoming, and ignorance. And so he said, I have eliminated the asavas. I have reached that goal that everyone is seeking. So others would say, how have you eliminated the asavas? And he said, I've eliminated craving for sense pleasures, eliminated craving for continued existence, and I've eliminated ignorance. Then everyone would say, that's a wonderful way of explaining the asavas. Okay, so as to the actual way of translating it, yeah, Venerable Nyanamoli had used the word taints, and so when I edited the middle-length discourses, I just left it unchanged. Though I don't know that I like it so much, even though I left it also in the Samyutta Nikaya, because it's just to be consistent, have the two translations consistent. But taint, I know, I just think of, well, you speak of tinted glasses, not tainted glasses, but...
Well, I think of taint as a defilement,
yeah,
a condition of mind.
Yeah.
Influx, I have trouble relating to in a psychological way.
Yeah, it's not a word that we use. In fact, it's almost an invented word.
But does it convey a psychological meaning in your mind?
I have to say influx, maybe it doesn't really, it's, as I said, it's an invented word. Maybe my advantage and disadvantage for myself, but disadvantage in terms of communication is that when I hear the word, I don't so much have to figure out influx, but immediately I think of asava. A good word that I just sort of now, there's been a recent translation of the Dhammapada. His name is California. Gil Evans. It's not that. I'd have to look at the name again. The name has just slipped my mind. But he uses toxins. That was a good rendering. It gets the sense across well. Toxins. Any further questions? Marcia. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Let me just repeat it for the benefit of my little pet pet recorder. She's asking whether one could arrive at a complete understanding of dependent origination.
That's what I get from the last paragraph.
Or whether one could arrive at right view just through an understanding of the relationship between two links. The way it's formulated, it seems to give that impression, but what I would say is that you see, these links are abstracted from living experience, and one doesn't understand experience through abstractions. So when one investigates experience as one is developing insight, one is seeing factors that are linked together in very complex webs of relationships. And so one might focus on particular relations between factors, but it's not that one is just understanding and basing one's whole understanding on just the relationship between two factors and nothing else is coming in. Yeah, but one has to, at certain points, investigate the relationship between all of the links. But the right view might arise based especially upon the connection between two particular factors. Yes?
I guess a related question is, you can enter this chain at any point, and from right understanding of that particular entrance point, then get
up there. Exactly, one can enter from any point. In fact, that is why one sees in different suttas, the Buddha explains it in different ways. Sometimes starting from the end, going back to the beginning, sometimes from birth, from aging and death, going back to ignorance. Sometimes he explains from ignorance going ahead to old age and death. Sometimes he'll begin. In fact, the next sutta that we're going to take, he starts someplace in the middle and I think goes back to ignorance. I'll have to take another look at it, but he enters someplace in the middle and goes either forwards or back. I don't remember exactly which. And in some suttas, in the Samyutta Nikaya, one finds the links presented in what seems to be out of sequence because one has to know how to interpret them. It's not like this is a fixed linear sequence, but, you know, experience is, as I said, it's a complex web of interwoven factors. And so one could pick up one aspect of experience and then trace its connection to other aspects from different angles. It's somewhat like, it's very, very much like the way one works now getting information from the internet. Like, say one is getting onto one news program, what do you call this, news website, then it will have on the sidebar, related links, So then you click, you see something, a related story from another website, you click onto that, then that will have a bunch of related links from another web, other websites, you click onto that, and then that will have maybe a bunch of related links connected with a vaguely relevant issue. But then you get onto that, and then you're miles away from the point where you started. But then eventually you might somehow find yourself sort of tracing your way back to the point where you started, or maybe you find yourself just in some completely different area which has almost no seeming relationship to the starting point. Okay, maybe time for one more question, if there is one. Okay.
One question about Anguttara Nikaya. One after another.
Yeah.
Some option leads to mindfulness and clear consciousness.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
But it seems to me mindfulness and clear comprehension leads to wisdom.
Yeah, I know.
And some others.
Yeah, it seems to me that I thought of that when I was looking at that list this afternoon or this morning. At the factors, this is also sometimes what one sees, factors in lists. One can't take them always in every respect as just a fixed linear sequence. But sometimes these factors are, again, interrelated in a certain way so that one could begin with one point and it will lead to another point. Whereas you could also start here and it will come back here. It could also be sometimes that originally there might have been several different lists which, when the monks were compiling the suttas to make it easy, they merged these lists. And so you get these various factors. Where we have a direct sequence would be going from the four foundations of mindfulness, the seven factors of enlightenment, to liberation by right knowledge. That one finds again and again in the suttas. That is like a definite straight sequence. But some of these others, the way they are interwoven, it seems one could have done it in different ways too. Especially going from faith directly to yoniso manasikara, it seems one would go from faith, this is to my understanding, from faith, it seems one would go to the three ways of good conduct, because sila, that's good conduct, is more basic than wise attention and mindfulness. So I would go to the three ways of good conduct. Then the three ways of good conduct from there go to mindfulness and clear... From three ways of good conduct, then to restraint of the senses. Then from restraint of the senses to mindfulness and clear comprehension. That's the usual sequence that one finds in like texts like the Majjhima Nikaya Gradual Training. Then from mindfulness and clear comprehension, then one might come to proper attention. Then from proper attention to the four foundations of mindfulness. Maybe, because actually, you see, this yoniso manasikara enters at so many points that it could enter also as even as a condition for, say, restraint of the senses, even as a condition for the three ways of good conduct. But then it could enter again as a condition for, after developing the four foundations of mindfulness, or even operating, it sort of operates within the four foundations of mindfulness as part of the practice within the four foundations of mindfulness for bringing the seven factors of enlightenment into being. Yeah, so anyway, one can't try to pinpoint it as like the letters in an alphabet. C has to come before D, E, D has to come before E. It's not like that. Okay, I think we'll have to end now. Okay, we end by sharing the merits of listening and speaking the Dhamma, share the merits with the Devas, the Buddhas, the Nagas, and all other beings, wishing them to be well and happy, and especially for these powerful beings to protect the Buddha's teaching and to protect the world from all sorts of harmful forces. Akasata chabumata devanagamahitika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata chabumata devanagamahitika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata chabumata devanagamahitika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakantu mam param. Etavata cham hehi sampadam punya sampadam. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata cham hehi sampadam punya sampadam. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata cham hehi sampadam punya sampadam. Sabbe sata anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.